This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time, and Mystery Hour is upon us once again. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. And yes, you're right, I didn't get to number one on the list of failing Graylings because I went all a bit fanboyish with Julian Richer, the head of Richer Sounds. I was supposed to end the interview at about 11:57, and then have a couple of minutes left to give you number one on the list of Grayling's failings. It is, of course, the privatisation of the probation service, which, if you are lucky enough to be able to listen to this programme on a regular basis, will have come as no surprise whatsoever. The only thing that was open to negotiation was the amount of money it would ultimately cost the taxpayer. That figure currently stands at £500 million. Why can't we put Julian Richer in charge of some stuff? Can't help thinking not only would things be a lot more efficiently run, but probably a lot more happy civil servants as well. But I digress. It is time for Mystery Hour. Listen, this is the way it works. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need if you have a question which needs an answer. And that question could be about almost anything. If you're new to this feature on the programme, then think of it as the radio equivalent of those old magazine Q&As and notes and queries, where you'd write in and ask something, and a few weeks later someone else would write in with the answer. This is live and interactive. Radio, you know, I promise I'll crack on in a minute. I'm going off on tangents left, right and centre at the moment. Can you go off on a tangent centre? I don't know. Anyway, I digress. Radio is all this talk about interactivity modern technology changing everything. Phone-in radio is pretty much the essence of interactivity, isn't it? Media interactivity. I know not everyone rings in, but listening is interacting in a way, texting, tweeting, all of those things. And yet, oddly, this has become a repository, this part of the programme, for old-fashioned values. And those old-fashioned values are illumination, education and elucidation. Opportunities not only to learn, but also to share the fruits of your learning. I nearly said show off then, which would apply to me, but to everybody else, it's sharing the fruits of your learning. Because it's good to know stuff, but we are poised upon the brink of an epoch in human history where knowing stuff won't matter anymore. I could talk to you for hours about that. I really could. It started with calculators being taken into maths exams, which people of my generation found unconscionable. How dare you? Presumably before that, it'd be a slide rule, would it? In the 40s, if you were allowed to take a slide rule into it meant you could calculate using an abacus even. I don't know. But as technology advances, so knowledge becomes less important. Why do you need to know stuff now? You can Google it immediately. Why would you learn a poem? It's there in front of you in seconds. You've got every library in the world in the palm of your hand. Ooh, did you write that down, Keith? You really have. Every library in the world is in the palm of your hand. Miss Jar is like an outpost of knowledge, all of which is a very pompous and recondite way of saying you're not allowed to look stuff up. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, ring in with the answer. But obviously, this is an antidote to Google and the internet and search engines, so do not look stuff up. Do not look stuff up. That's a blinking order. 12:07 is the time. Shall we crack on? I think we shall. Jonathan's in South Norwood. Question or answer, Jonathan?
Question.
Carry on.
And yes, this is my first time to actually phone up.
You're very welcome.
Anybody.
Well, ever. You've never used a phone before.
No, so sod off. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean.
I did know what you mean, but you left an open goal there, pal.
I did, didn't I? Actually, I tell you what, you're much nicer to talk to in real life. Anyway.
Go right. On. Yes.
Do trees have memories?
How do you mean?
Because when you're on, when the trees lose their leaves in the winter and they grow back,
yeah.
When you're on the top of a double-decker bus, why do the trees grow so that the bus doesn't hit them? Because if you notice, they grow, and they grow out, but they normally don't. They normally overhang.
Yeah, but even when the trees aren't there, the buses are hitting the branches.
Yes, so the buses are hitting the branches, but then when the leaves grow, they make sure that they don't get hit by the trees, by the bush.
I like the question. Memory's not quite the right word, is it? But I know exactly why. I can't think of a better one. So
no, I know.
Is it like an evolutionary process, yes, by which trees... Well, it's not quite evolution, is it? Because they wouldn't... Yeah, OK. I really like that question. Okay, I mean, what a sparkling debut on national radio, Jonathan. That's quite astonishing. You realise it'll be downhill all the way now. You'll never scale the giddy heights of Do Trees Have Memories? However many radio stations you ring, however many times, you have peaked, pal. That's it.
We'll never get an answer for this one, probably.
Well, if I rephrased it as how come trees grow in a way that means that buses don't hit them?
Yes.
How does that work? Then we might get an answer. I like it. Jonathan, you're a star. Thank you so much. And thank you for making me laugh as well. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. How come trees do that thing on roads where they come back after the autumn and the winter and yet they still don't touch the buses? There's like a little half an arch. So on one side of the tree, you've got full-on foliage. On the other side of the tree, you've got like a mini tunnel, half a tunnel. You've all seen it. Why am I describing it in such clumsy terms? 9 minutes after 12 is the time. That's question number one. Neil is in Dublin. Neil, question or answer?
Hi there, James. It's a question.
Carry on, Neil.
So I'm not sure if you guys are experiencing the same nice weather as we are here in Dublin at the moment. But I was walking through a park on the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt sorry for some of the pigeons.
Really?
All the ducks were floating around in the water and they were duck diving and splashing themselves and all the pigeons were standing around the edge just watching. Why don't pigeons swim?
Well, is that a proper mystery, Neil? It's got a touch of the Miles Nagopoleans to it, the Flann O'Briens, hasn't it, that question? I like it on a kind of surreal level, but I mean, the answer's probably obvious, but there's lots and lots of birds. I mean, lots of birds don't swim. Why pick on pigeons?
Yeah, absolutely. Pigeons were the one I saw.
Because there has been no evolutionary advantage accrued by pigeons that maybe at some point in the distant past could actually swim. They didn't get to breed.
Potentially, yeah. But also, when you're looking at them, ducks are floatable. They've got a very wide base.
I can't help thinking you're using my programme to rehearse some pre-prepared material here, Neil, rather than just entering into the genuine spirit of inquiry. You're giving me your duck pigeon routine. Why don't pigeons swim? I'll take that. I like that, and it could have a silly answer. It could have a scientific one. It's a good one. Why don't pigeons swim? There's a relationship between pigeons and seagulls, cliff dwelling or historic split in the family tree, but I can't remember what it is, and I've probably got it wrong already. Do I have any women ringing Mystery Hour at the moment? Can we get rid of a couple of these fellas and make room for some female contributors? I don't like gender domination during Mystery Hour. Rob is in Banbury. Rob, question or answer?
A question, please, James.
Yes.
My daughter's gone to the Isle of Purbeck this weekend.
Oh, yes.
And I just wondered what defines an island, because surely most coastal regions you can't reach without crossing over water. So what makes the Isle of Purbeck an isle as opposed to just an outlying bit of land?
I mean, completely surrounded by water is the obvious answer, and it's so obvious I think I've misunderstood the question.
Well, I would thought most coastal areas you can't reach without crossing over water to get to. So most coastal areas will be surrounded by water to some extent.
No, not to some extent. Completely surrounded by water is the definition of an island.
I didn't think the Isle of Purbeck was completely surrounded.
Oh, I see. That's why Purbeck is specific to this. I don't know enough about the Isle of Purbeck, but it might just be a figure of speech or a name, or harking back to the days when the tidal movements were different and it was completely surrounded by water. But the dictionary definition, I know this, of an island is any land that is surrounded by water.
So the Isle of Purbeck isn't...
I don't know enough about you're asking me about the Isle of Purbeck. I thought you were asking me about the etymology and definition of the word island. I don't know is the Isle of Purbeck attached to land? Is it an isle? I'm going to look it up. I'm not allowed to look stuff up on Mystery Hour, but this is not. I'm not looking for an answer. I've given you the answer. I'm just going to have a look at Isle of Purbeck. Do do do. It's a peninsula. It's not an isle. So it's misnamed.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That answers that one then.
Yeah, well, we've all learned something there, Rob. Do you want to share? Shall we share the round of applause, mate? I feel a bit greedy having it all to myself.
We'll share it.
Go on, half and half, please. Thank you very much. It's not a proper isle. It's only a blinking peninsula. Dan's in Orpington. Dan, question or answer?
Answer to your tree question, your leaves.
Oh, splendid. Carry on.
Is air pruning.
Pardon?
Basically, the leaves can't grow where they're constantly being pruned by the airflow. In the same way that you can have, they grow trees in particular pots that have holes all around the outside of them, so that if the fibrous roots reach air, they don't carry on growing because there's no nutrients there. It works above ground as well, so the buses are constantly pruning the trees. You were right in the way...
Oh, we've lost him. Okay, are you all right? Are you there, Dan? We've lost you.
I'm here.
Are you up a tree at the moment?
Of course.
Are you? I mean, he's already on a round of applause. I can't, but... Hit, Dan!
Air pruning!
Round of applause!
Yay!
Are you up a tree?
No.
But you are a tree surgeon.
I certainly am a tree surgeon.
I should have established your qualifications before doling out that round of applause willy-nilly. I love that phrase, air pruning. Sounds a bit naughty, doesn't it? Or is that just me? Oh, sorry. Jeff's in Bristol. Jeff. I'll be with you in a moment, mate. It's time for a break.
This is LBC. Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
If you're just tuning in, what I'm about to say might not make much sense. But I think I've just been sent footage of a floating pigeon. It's alive. It's alive. Number five is alive. Whether or not that answers Neil's question from Dublin, why don't pigeons swim, I do not know. I'll share that. It's coming from Niall. I'll share that with you on Twitter if you're interested. It's quite funny. But whether or not it constitutes an answer to the question, I do not know. It doesn't anyway, because that would involve breaking the rules. Just for the record, I didn't break the rules when I looked up Isle of Purbeck. There's two ways I can prove that. Number one, I invent the rules. And number two... I had answered the question about what is the definition of an island. I was merely humouring my caller by specifically looking for the context of his question. I'd already answered the question. So get back in your box, Wayne in Basildon. 12:18 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. Question still looking for answers. I love the tree answer. Wasn't that a nice one? Why don't pigeons swim? And we've done island as well, so we're moving along nicely. Let's go back to Bristol. Jeff's there. Jeff, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Jeff.
Good morning, James. Why is there only one Monopolies Commission?
I am amused by your aperçu, your contribution to the programme. I do not think, however, it constitutes a question that you are asking in good faith.
Well, it's a silly hour, and I applaud you for it. I think it's inspired, and I thought I could be sillier.
I know, well, you've succeeded in being sillier, but I just wanted to establish that you're not expecting anyone to ring in with a proper answer. Well, you can't. A Monopolies Commission exists to see whether or not there are monopolies in specific commercial areas. It is not itself.
But it might not be being fair.
No, but it's not a specific commercial area, is it? There's no profit to be made from being the. You're suggesting that the Monopoly Commission has a monopoly on commissioning monopolies.
It does, and I think that's unfair, and it should be taken up by the Monopolies Commission.
I shall pass your complaint on to the relevant members of staff at the Monopolies Commission. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Well played, Jeff. Barry's in Birmingham. Barry, question or answer?
Do dogs have a concept of time the same way that human beings do?
Well, how would we know?
Well, I don't know. I just wondered if someone had done some investigating into this.
In what way? Sort of research.
Well, I want to know if when I go on holiday, I put my dog in a kennels for a week. Does he miss me? That's what I want to know.
Of course he misses you, but does he miss you more after a week than he would after a month or a day?
We as human beings know the concept 24/7. We know when a week passes.
Well, no, dogs don't have clocks. They don't have. I mean, they have a concept of night and day. They're attuned to dusk and dawn, as you know, and they miss people and they miss things and toys. But I don't know how you'd ever be able to establish whether or not they had a concept of time in the human way.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I want to know because, you know, if 24 hours pass, I'm not saying a dog sort of sets his watch by going, okay, yeah, I know my dinner's going to get ready 8 o'clock in the morning.
They just get hungry, don't they?
I'm just wondering if they have that concept, you know?
I completely understand your curiosity. I'm not overcome with optimism about it allowing a proper answer. But we'll find out. No, we'll find out. We'll find out.
Thank you very much.
No, you're very welcome, Barry. Do dogs have any concept of time? I don't know, because you hear stories, don't you, about dogs going missing for 6 years and then being delighted to be reunited with their owners. Would the dog go any more bonkers after 6 years than it did after? I mean, you can turn your back on your dog for 20 seconds and it greets you like it's the second coming. It's the thing I like most about dogs. It's what distinguishes them most from cats. Can pretty much take or leave their owners, can't they, cats? However much we may persuade ourselves otherwise. Dogs, I so envy our little one, dog. Absolutely dedicated and devoted to Mrs. O'Brien. I get quite jealous. I don't mind it with the kids. That's fine. I'm used to it. But the dog goes bonkers when Mrs. O'Brien comes home. Barely cocks a snook when I stroll through my own front door. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Sammy is in Stamford La Hope. Sammy, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I would like to know why humans dance to music, like we're pre-programmed to dance to music.
We're not pre-programmed. You have a choice.
Well, I don't know, because...
Well, of course you know. You're not hypnotised. I start playing music now, you're at a funeral or something, or driving your car, you're not going to start boogieing, are you?
No, that's very true. But from babies, from a very, very young age, if they hear a certain beat to music, they'll just dance. They've never been taught to do that. It's just already in them.
I like that. Do we see it in other species? Do we see anything that goes for rhythmic movements?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I don't know. Not that I can think of. But, you know, if you put a 4 or 5 month old baby in front of a beat or a radio, it will just start to dance. So it just happens.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Humans and dancing. I like it. Well played. Thank you, Sammy. 0345 606 0973. Why do humans dance, I think, is the nice question. I mean, why not would be the answer, but there must be a reason for it. It feels good. It also, I wonder if it's got something to do with the heartbeat and self-hypnosis. Speaking as a former raver, I well remember the trance-like state one could achieve with some banging tunes being played by the superstar DJ. And by dancing in rhythm, you would reach a state of euphoria. Even if you hadn't taken drugs designed to help you reach a state of euphoria, you would, trust me. And there might be something in that. And then you take that back to primeval times, wouldn't you, in prehistoric times, and drums. Some link with the heartbeat. That's why I love Mystria. It might be complete hogwash, that, or it might be knocking at the door of a correct answer. I'm certainly not going to claim I've gone through it. Tom, you're banned. Can we ban Tom from the programme? He says, James, you're being a bit naughty. That caller didn't ask what the definition of an island was, but why that specific place was called an island when it's not. That's not true, Tom. Hashtag fake news. He specifically said, what is the definition of an island? Because I've just dropped my daughter off at the Isle of Purbeck and it doesn't appear to be an island. So I said, the definition of an island is a body of land that is completely covered by water. That was the correct answer to his question. He then asked again about the Isle of Purbeck, at which point I conceded I didn't know enough about the Isle of Purbeck to contribute to the conversation, so I looked it up on the interweb. That is perfectly within the rules. How do I know that? Because I make up the rules. John is in Abbey Road. John, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's Chris, actually.
Mystery theme tune, Chris. Oh, so John is you were in character last time you rang in and we've left it on the screen.
Well, a long while ago that was, yeah. But hey.
Sorry, so for people, hang on, I need to explain now. Chris is John in... you're not John.
No, I am John.
Yeah, in your Beatles tribute band.
That's right.
Which is called...
The Counterfeit Beatles.
The Counterfeit Beatles. So he's not John now, he's Chris. But when he's in costume and in character with the Counterfeit Beatles, he's John, which suggests to me that despite being a cabbie, you're probably not on Abbey Road either.
No, that's correct.
Thank you. What's your question?
The question is, it's black cab related. We can only keep our cabs for 15 years, as you're probably aware.
Yes.
I was wondering, back in the olden days when we used to have horse and cart type cabs,
yeah,
how long did a musher get out of his horse? How long did it last?
Well, the average working life of a handsome cab pulling horse.
Yes, yes, please.
Really?
Yes, please.
I think you're just too keen to get on the show again with this. I don't think you've thought this question through or particularly
carefully. Oh, I'm thinking of going back to getting a horse, mate.
Go on, then. 12:26. You're only allowed to drive a cab with an engine for 15 years, how long could you get out of a horse? Not sure that's the best question we've ever had, but given that Chris Stroke John is a VIP listener, he gets a special dispensation. David is in Amsterdam. David, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Regarding time concept by animals,
yes.
It's related to what they call it mental time travel. So some animals do have it and some don't.
And dogs?
Hello?
I'm here, I'm listening, I'm thinking. You just dropped some pretty heavy stuff, David. It takes me a moment to absorb it, all right? Don't be so impatient.
No.
What about dogs?
I don't know about dogs, but I know about certain animals, like, for example, humans, for example. Mm-hmm. They have a mental time travel. Their sense of time, that's different from the biological clock or time. I'm working on a proposal called the neuroscience of time.
Are you a qualified neuroscientist or just an enthusiastic amateur?
No, I'm a psychiatrist, ethicist and a neuroscientist.
Wow.
Sorry about that.
No, I mean, you're going to get a round of applause for that as well. You might have given Professor Hall a complex. But you haven't answered the question.
The question is that they do have the sense of time, but it's different from us. And the answer, total cost answer, I can give it to you in 4 years from now.
After you have... So are you going to use this contribution to National Radio in Britain to secure funding for your neuroscientific research in the Netherlands?
I have my own private funding.
I wish
I don't
you were.
Need funding.
Ooh,
oh, by
you.
The way,
carry
one
on.
Thing.
What?
One thing, I have to correct it.
What?
I answered you a few months ago about how much energy the brain takes.
Yes.
And I said to you 40%. I correct myself. I'm wrong. It's about 30%.
Whew, thank God you've done. Sheesh. I was worried about getting Ofcom complaints. I thought they might have taken me off air if you hadn't phoned in to correct that error. I haven't slept since you made that mistake, David, but not being a neuroscientist stroke psychiatrist with private funding, I didn't feel qualified to correct you live on air.
No. You should correct yourself all the time.
But
Google mental time travel.
Chronesthesia. This is banter. Give Sorry? David a quick round of applause, and then I'm going to go to...
No,
you get it, just out of politeness, in recognition of your qualifications. But Vieri in Milan is Dr. Dog. He is one of the world's leading animal behaviourists. So I'm going to presume you phoned in to answer that question, Vieri, and not something else.
Yeah, well, I have, James.
Good man.
I have indeed.
Let's go.
I'm sitting, standing in the middle of a park in Rome, and it's sunny, it's a beautiful day, and I was listening to you, and... to your contributors' answer to the question of whether the dogs have memory.
Yes. Well, time, a concept of time more than a memory.
Well, that's where it comes from. There are two types of memory, and that is one that is conscious and one that is subconscious. So, for example, conscious memory is I want to learn Spanish, and I start learning Spanish, and I'm conscious of the fact that I want to start learning Spanish, and I'm trying to learn through a learning process.
Yes.
Subconscious is when I learn to ride a bike and can still do it 3 years later after I've ridden one.
Yes.
So dogs have that. And if you think of, I don't know, have you ever heard of Pavlov and the famous bell?
I have, yeah, of course, you know? I have, yeah.
Truth is, he never used the bell. But anyway, he found out that dogs have a memory. And the memory is subconscious, associating two events within a very short period of time, 2 seconds. And that depends on how well it's conditioned and for how long it stays them for the whole, you know, stays with them for the rest of their life. So, yes, they do have memory.
Qualifications?
And the reason why I work with dogs.
Well, I mean, so did John Noakes. I don't know if he'd have been qualified to answer this question. Quite a niche joke, that, actually. I don't know if everyone would have got it.
So, you know, when you come home after just going out to empty the bin, and you come back, and your dog flips out as if she hasn't seen you for years.
Of course, yeah.
It's just not because she's forgotten and, you know, has no brain. It's just simply because she's very happy that you're back.
I keep the key for the back door in a little drawer in the kitchen, and the dog now responds to me opening that drawer because she knows that means I'm about to open the back door, and she'll run towards the back door the minute I open the drawer. Even if the door's wide open and she's just come in. She hears that door and she goes mad. Drawer, and she goes mad for the door again.
Yeah, absolutely. That's conditioning. Same with me and the smell of pizza. I smell pizza, I get hungry. Even if you've just eaten
six. Give Vieri, and you can find out more about him by Googling Dr. Dog. He is a man who knows of what he speaks.
Thanks a lot, James.
Take care, mate. Round of applause. That was from Amsterdam to Rome in two calls. It's now 12:31, and Lisa Aziz has your headlines.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 606 0973.
It is 12:36. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. If you want to have a crack at this, I'll give you the money myself. How come there's only one Monopoly commission? Why don't pigeons swim? Well done to Vieri for doing the dogs question. Why do we dance? And back in the day, when cabs were horse-drawn, how long would the average horse last? I do actually quite like that question on reflection. David is in Hampstead. David, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
Where does the tune for Happy Birthday come from? Because anywhere you go in the world, it's the same. It's obviously sung different languages.
It was written by, and I think, two American sisters. Well, it was some Americans in about the 1930s.
But why is the tune universal, and how
that's
is
not
it
why you
universal?
Asked.
Where did the tune come from?
I told
specifically?
You.
Oh, is that? Yeah. Oh, gosh.
I know.
Is that definite?
Wow. Do you know, it depends entirely on my mood. No, I'm not joking.
For a judge's inquiry, then.
Well, you can, but there are weeks in which I would give myself a round of applause for that, because I'm kind of 80% sure I'm almost right. And then there are other weeks when I feel overcome by modesty and self-effacing instincts, and I wouldn't dream of giving myself a round of applause for that. And luckily for you, Dave, we were in one of the latter weeks rather than the former. But it's relevant to royalties. There was a story involving Happy Birthday and royalties that was around about 10 years ago, and that is where, might be earlier than the 30s, it might even have been before the First World War, but I'm pretty sure it was early 20th century that the tune was simply written and released, and I presume it just went all around the world because it's so catchy and birthdays are pertinent, relevant, present in every existing culture.
That doesn't...
Right, a film, then. It was probably in a Doris Day film. There you go.
Well, I don't know. It's just, I think there's so many different cultures and stuff. They can't all watch the same film.
They don't all sing it to the same tune. How many countries have you been to for birthday parties?
Well, I know that they do it, obviously, in the UK. I know France do.
Yeah.
I'm almost certain Germany do. I know that Israel does. And I've heard it in other languages. I'm not talking about the languages.
Sing it in another language.
Oh, I can't do that. That's not music radio.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I think you're just inventing stuff to shore up the credibility of your question.
I would do anything but sing it in another language.
Blimey, there's an offer. I'll see what I can do. All right, I don't think you get it in like Japan or North Korea.
Well, yeah. So we'll never know about North Korea, but Japan, I reckon it's probably the same. I reckon it's the same tune. I reckon so.
All right. Okay. So, I mean, I think I've answered your question of origin, but I will allow, because I'm being a little bit fast and loose with the rubric of Mystery Hour this week, I will allow that sort of quasi-supplementary question of why is it so widespread, if indeed David is telling the truth about his travels to Israel, France, Germany, and Ava, my producer, adds Spain. Thank you, David. Speaking of Ava, my producer, a few of you are complaining about repetition of questions, most notably the one about dancing. That's Keith's fault. Keith is now the longest-serving member of staff on this programme. Ava and Sam, relatively recent arrivals. So, Keith, you should have spotted the dancing one, mate. Apparently we had a month ago. I had it a month ago when you were definitely in situ. Anything you'd like to say to the listeners? Keith's very sorry. He's very sorry. Richard is in Shepherd's Bush. Richard, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Why is it that there's so many more right-handed people in the world than left-handed? Because you would think that it was just arbitrary.
I think it'd be 50-50.
Yeah.
It's a solid question. Have you tried... I think it's evolutionary advantageous to be right-handed. I mean, if you think about trying to do stuff with your left hand, it's really hard.
If you're right-handed, yes.
No. Even if you're left-handed, writing for a left-handed person is a heck of a lot harder than it is for a right hand. Writing with your left hand for a left-handed person is a heck of a lot harder than writing with your right hand for a right-handed person.
I'll take your word for it. You left or right-handed?
Right-handed.
So am I.
So if you were left-handed, your hand follows the nib across the page. So, I mean, that's a fairly low-level example of what might have accrued evolutionary advantage, in the sense that if you were right-handed, you were going to breed a lot more than a left-handed person. I thought
maybe it's something to do with the right and left-hand side of the brains.
Could be.
Who knows?
Yeah, okay. Why are there so many more right-handed people than left-handed? I like that question. It's odd that we're both right-handed. Your interest has been sparked by empathy. 12:41 is the time. Lewis is in Cardiff. Lewis, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's the why do we dance question.
Oh, yes.
We're sticking on a topic of evolution here, I'm sorry, James.
I love evolution, mate. It's very important at the moment to remind ourselves how persuasive it is as a scientific paradigm. Carry on.
We dance as a happy accident of evolution. The short answer is it's emerged as an ability of a byproduct of our ability to imitate sound.
Oh, yes.
So, basically, birds and humans dance, and with the exception of one elephant, other animals don't.
Birds dance? Are you sure?
Yeah, I am. Okay. Animals that dance have, to use neuroscience, have a very close connection between their auditory and motor circuits. In other words, our brains are basically wired up to reproduce very complex sounds. There was a study done, and I'm afraid because we're not allowed to Google this stuff, I can't remember who the author was, but they basically looked at videos of somewhere in the region of about 5,000 different videos on across several different platforms. What they were looking at was whether animals who have this ability, or they think may have this ability, were able to follow beat. Yeah. And the outcome of the study basically suggested that any animal that is a vocal learner, so birds and humans, danced, and those who weren't, didn't. And not just didn't, couldn't. Mm. Of the videos, of the 5,000-odd videos they viewed, about 30-something bird videos were persuasive, and, like I said, one elephant, and they were moving in sync to a beat.
How bizarre.
So that's basically the answer, is that it's a happy little byproduct of our innate ability to reproduce sound.
Qualifications?
I have a PhD in physiology with an interest in anthropology, and one of my students asked me this a couple of weeks ago.
That's a fairly strong qualification, fairly strong answer. So it's got nothing to do with that business I was wanging on about, trances and hypnotists and drums and heartbeat. No.
I'm not saying that it doesn't, but I'm saying that there's no evidence to suggest that yet.
That's an academic's answer there, which is kind of the same as a politician's answer, but somehow more compelling.
I usually finish up by saying further research is required.
Further research is required. I might end every mystery hour by saying further research is required. No further research is required, Lewis, in the process of deciding whether or not to award you a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Matt's in Ashstead. Matt, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
To do with auctioneers, and I go to auctions every now and then.
Yes.
And I don't know if you've seen like Storage Wars on telly. The
yes.
auctioneers, not everyone, but a lot of them, they do the half and half and ten. And they do that kind of patter thing in between the bids, which can be confusing, and it seems to be quite exhausting. I wondered why they do that.
Oh, can I answer this from the point of view of having done an auction or not?
Why not?
I got asked to be the auctioneer at the Combat Stress Dinner a couple of years ago, the mental health charity for military veterans that I'm very passionate in my support of. And I wouldn't have said yes to anyone else, to be honest with you, Matt, because despite having an ego the size of Middlesex, I do get really nervous about new stuff. And I'd never done an auction before, but that is one organisation that I can't say no to. And it really works. It really, really works. I mean, not just necessarily the rhythmic droning or the jibber-jabber that you describe, but the interaction with the crowd, the teasing, they're trying to get the momentum going. And you can get more money out of people by getting a sense of excitement going. Do you see what I mean? And I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the noise and the rhythm. And then also, of course, are you going to let him do that to you, sir? He is laughing at you, sir. Everyone on his table, sir, is laughing at you. Are you going to let him get away with that, sir? Oh, £500 from table 17. Madam, are you going to let... And that really, really works.
I understand that.
Come on. And I'm not available. I'm not available for bookings. Can we make that quite clear? I've got a paperback to flog next month. Carry on.
Yeah, I understand, you know, the kind of goading and trying to get a bit more money, but I don't understand with the
Really, mate, because you want to finish it. It leads you to somewhere. It's like, and then you want to, get me, yes! You think the fear of missing out, it's FOMO.
Okay, so you think it's just to kind of cajole people into another bid, or
But you're not going to take my answer for it, are you?
Well, no, you know, if someone else has any other input, then I would take that.
But we want a psychologist, really, don't we?
I'm not against you, James.
Oh, I can tell. I'm very grateful to hear that, Matt. Very gracious of you too, and also you gave me an opportunity to. You know, try out my old auctioneer technique, which only I've had one outing in public before. It was great fun. I mean, it's real power by the time, by about the third lot, I was basically David Dickinson.
Well, you went the colour of leather satchel.
We better leave it there. Thank you, Matt. Why do the auctioneers not just do the kind of banter, but the rhythmic jibber-jabber? 0345 606 0973. Bonus points for the Mr. T reference.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:50 is the time. Mystery Hour is underway, nearly over. Why don't pigeons swim? And we've done dancing. That was a lovely answer. How long did a horse last in the days of horse-drawn cabs? Quite like that. Happy birthday. Where did it come from? Why is it so widespread? And why are so many people right-handed? Why is it so disproportionate? Oh, and finally, the auctioneer's... style. Is there a reason? Is there a psychological reason for the kind of almost like the horse racing style nature of many auctioneers? Not just the content, but the escalating tone, the escalate and the speed. You know what I'm talking about. That. Mark's in Benfleet in Essex. Mark, question or answer?
I have an answer. But can I trade it for a question?
No, certainly not. My God.
Is that not how it works?
No, the universe would break.
Fair enough. I have an answer to the happy birthday question.
Carry on.
That you were quite right. It was penned by a pair of sisters in America, but I think you were a few years out. They wrote it in the late 1800s. They were school teachers, and it was a tune that they would welcome the kids into the class in the morning.
That's
so it would be good morning to you.
No, good morning to all. Good morning to all.
Good morning to all.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, you're right. Well done.
And then it was used in the 1930s in a film, and somebody spotted it and... It sort of latterly got ascribed to them and has gone on to become the number one royalty-earning song of all time.
Except it doesn't anymore. It fell out of copyright, I think, a couple of years ago, which
but
is why there was a lawsuit.
But the amount that it's amassed... It's still,
oh, the total amount that it amassed over the years. Do we know why, according to David in Hampstead, and I have no reason to believe him, but it is, he claims, sung to the same tune in many, many, many other languages? I don't know that either, actually. But no, two sisters, late 19th century, originally Good Morning to All, and morphed into a Happy Birthday song. So I think you've done it. Qualifications?
I used to work in the music industry, and so those sorts of things would come up all the time.
As in the context of the copyright and the royalty payments?
Yeah, exactly.
Angle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Round of applause for Mark.
Thank you very much.
And next time, Mark, if you get through, you can ask your question. Archie! Gosh, there's a name that's assumed a whole new meaning in the last couple of weeks, Archie.
It's a great honour and a privilege. I'm trying to tell everyone that it's because of me, but I think that's unlikely.
But you're rolling with it, are you? You don't feel as if the brand has been in any way diluted or diminished?
No, I think it's been massively enhanced. The problem is, however successful I become, I'll always be the most... second most famous Archie, which is a great shame.
Well, you never know. He's only about seventh in line to the throne.
They drop out quite quickly over the years, they do.
No, they do. You know, the game is far from over. You become captain of the England football team, I think you'd outrank the first son of the second son of the...
Greater chance of me being reincarnated as an olive, to quote Mr. Johnson on that one, but yes.
Question or answer, Archie?
Answer regarding your auction question. I'm a magician. I do quite a lot of charity auctions.
Yes.
And there's two reasons for it. It goes back, I think, to the old farmyard livestock auctions. One of it is it kind of hypnotises your audience, so they're much more relaxed.
Yes, it
does. And the second thing, very similar to your job, dead air is an absolute nightmare when you're doing an auction, particularly if you're trying to focus.
Cool.
So you do it partly for yourself, because it helps you continue to speak. So you'll go, who's going to give me 100? 100 on the left, 200 on the right, that's good, 200 on the right, that's very good. Put a hand up, met him at the back, that's 300. You go like that, and it just allows you to keep talking.
I actually love dead air. I think silence is the most powerful weapon in a radio presenter's arsenal, but Keith tends to panic, and there's a tape of Steve Allen that gets played if the dead air goes on for too long. That's a beautiful answer. And your qualifications are clear, and your round of applause is secured, but before you go, do you have any advice for young Archie?
So much
much advice for young Archie. The key thing is to embrace having a weird name, be a bit of a show-off, but don't try and get tempted to kill off your cousins. Historically, that hasn't worked. Be content at number 7.
Round of applause for Archie. I did do a topic many years ago about having a name that suddenly became different. Archie's not an example of that. I meant, like, if you reached the age of 50 and then a serial killer emerged who had exactly the same name as you, suddenly at the age of 50, for the rest of your life, when you tell people the name you've had for 50-odd years, they're going to go, oh, blimey. It's a bit unfortunate. Dennis? Paul's in Caerphilly. Paul, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
Well, at least it's a partial answer anyway. Oh. It's to do with the question about right-handedness. I think there'll be some sort of evolutionary element to it, but my qualifications aren't in that. But okay. I do know the logical element to it as well. And it's because left-handedness was actually frowned upon.
Yes, it was. I mean, it's sinister in Latin, doesn't it? And we can see where the word sinister has evolved into. But that would that limit your chances of getting some?
I think that, like, with the language today, we've got the word adroit as well, obviously, meaning skillful. It's right in French. And we have the word gauche as well, meaning left.
Yes.
And cack-handed as well, also means yes. Left-handedness. And it was, yeah, it was really frowned upon. So it was discouraged. So a lot of people actually have learned how to write right-handed.
Yes, but I don't know if that answers the biological question of why it's so disproportionately represented in what should be a binary answer.
And I think
you've given us an interesting bit of historical detail, but I think we both know you haven't answered the question, Paul.
Well, maybe a little bit.
Well, in that case, I'll give you a little bit of applause.
Oh, go on. A little round of applause.
That's far too long. Keith, you've got...
That was really long.
That was ridiculously long. Give it back, Paul. Thank you.
There.
I mean, it's at least a little. You can keep the change. 12:56 is the time. Where are we going next? Apparently, we've got a more comprehensive answer to the question that we just attempted. It's another Paul, this one in Staplehurst. Question or answer, Paul?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Paul.
Just supplementing what your previous caller said.
Yes.
In fact, you were right, really, yourself in alluding to the fact that it's evolutionary.
Thank you.
And it comes from two areas, really. It comes from conflict avoidance, whereby the protection of critical parts of the body, particularly the heart, meant that a shield was used by them, the left hand, leaving the fighting arm, the sword, on the right hand.
Yes.
And over time, therefore, those who became stronger at that, therefore right-handed started to dominate. But there's also a secondary one, that as we know, the left side of our brain controls the right side of our body predominantly. And the left side of our brain also controls certain functions like logic, critical thinking, etc.
Uh-huh.
So in a Western world, whereby those functions mean the left side of your brain starts to become more developed and more dominant, it will exacerbate the use of the right side of your body as well.
Mm,
so therefore we have a secondary effect that starts to happen.
So are you think this, I've misunderstood you. You're saying that you could be construed as establishing a sort of eugenics-based rationale for discrimination against left-handed people?
Well, the evolution means that we will always end up with more right-handed people. There are a number of reasons why you can become left-handed. And only one of those is to do with the hereditary nature.
Okay.
There are other reasons like a reduction in testosterone in the womb and other factors like that can also mean that you can end up being left-handed. So left-handed is only one reason is inheritance. There are other reasons why you can become left-handed. But in a Western world, you'll end up with more people developing more dexterity in the right side of their body. If we lived in a different part of the world where more creative approaches and more relaxed attitudes were taken, you could end up actually with more people becoming ambidextrous or even left-handed.
What on earth are your qualifications?
I'm a psychologist with a specialism in behavioural preferences.
Absolute magnificence. Come on, Keith. John, I'm sorry, mate. You got short change there. I don't know what's happened to Keith. I think he's got... Can we give John a proper round of applause, please? Paul, not John. No, I can't really criticise Keith when I'm getting Paul's name wrong. That's it for another day. I know we won't. We'll have to take it. Right, Sheila Fogarty is awaiting. So John in Eltham, who's got an answer to the question about cabbies. I'm afraid, mate, we haven't got time this week. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Yeah, sorry, John. Thanks, James.